Okay, welcome back, lovely people. Sorry for the delay. And finally, we now have a presentation on the core process we do at DIVD, scanning notifying on vulnerabilities on FortiGate. We performed this research together with Fox IT. We have these two lovely researchers from Fox IT, Erik Schamper and Axel Boesenach. And Axel Boesenach also works at DIVD, where we call him Mr. Fingerprint. And what that is about, he will explain now. He'll start, save your questions till the end. We got half an hour. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for attending. I hope nobody leaves the room in the meantime. But we're going to talk a little bit about the FortiGate fingerprint, or more about the process in getting that fingerprint, actually. So a little bit of background. The year is 2022. Lots of vulnerabilities. It's going to be better, right? Nope. It's going to be worse. It's 2023. This year, or actually last week, the intelligence services released this paper. It's very nice, but there's a problem, obviously, and there's a need to actually visualize where are these devices and what versions are they running. And if they're running a version that is vulnerable, can we maybe notify the party that's running this so they can fix it, hopefully? Well, there's also a little bit of background regarding edge devices. This is not something that you would see in the news like a couple of years ago, maybe every once in a while. But lately, this has really become a trend. It's not that they weren't targeted before. It's more that more people are outing them in blog posts. And I think also on incident response level, the capabilities are becoming a little bit better. So now you can actually find stuff. Of course, not every CVE is equal. There's a lot of CVEs in the 198 shown from 2023, which might have an impact like information disclosure. That's not that interesting. We're talking about the remote code executions. That's also the part that we're scanning for. So we're not going to scan and notify them when an XML is being shown on some page. There's a little problem with the FortiGates. A, they're expensive devices, and we just want the firmware images. So where do you get them if you don't have the device? There's this lovely website, or there was this lovely website, actually. It was hosted in Iran. They had a lot of images that we could just plainly download, so we didn't need a FortiGate account. You could just browse this or use curl, get all the images you wanted, and then could look at them at your own leisure. So, the fingerprint, well, how are you even identifying them on the web right now? So how do you know what to scan? Because if you're going to scan the whole internet, it's going to take a little while. It's also more expensive. So this is the normal HTTP response. And if we look in the response, there's a hash. And this hash is part of this is used to create the paths to the different scripts. And every device, or at least that's how the hypothesis started. Every device has its own hash, and this is how you could possibly fingerprint. Well, we dived into it. I didn't get that far. I did manage to find a base for research, so we could use this base to look a little bit further. And if we look at some of the stuff inside of this image, there's one thing that caught my eye, and that's this sort of like pattern. And if it's encrypted with some decent encryption, you would not see a recurring pattern. So there's this nice color scheme, so you can see where it is actually repeating a pattern. So when seeing this, my mind starts to go a little bit like, this is not that high of entropy. So what are we going to look for? Well, we're going to dive into the decryption routine. There's actually a binary that is responsible for this hash that was in the prior research. There's one small problem. This binary is 70 megabytes. That doesn't sound like much, but we're talking about code, and that's actually pretty big. Throw this bad boy into IDA, and it becomes 700 megabytes. So if we're going to look for anything, strings is your best bet. It's going to show you where different parts are used, and these parts are used for the firmware. So if we're looking at some of these functions, there's actually one function that's very interesting. It is reading a buffer with a set amount of bytes, and it's using this buffer in the function And that function looks a little bit like this. This is annotated, so it doesn't actually look like this if you're going to throw this in your own IDA or Gaidra or, God forbid, Rodari. But if we look over here, there is a key, and this key is present in the firmware image. So every firmware image has its own key, and this key is hard-coded in the image. And you would say, well, just grab this from the image then. Well, yes, but the image is encrypted. So this is nice, but this doesn't get you that far if you don't already decrypt these images.
For those of you wondering, by the way, how we even got this file in the first place, the virtual machine appliances of FortiGate are not encrypted. So we actually use those with kind of the hypothesis that they probably don't have a whole separate code base for the virtual machine appliances as for their own hardware appliances. So there's probably a shared code base there that we can use to see if there's like a decryption routine. And there was.
Yep. So if we look at this, there is a mode which just says I'm going to encrypt or I'm going to decrypt. The bottom part is for encryption. And then we have this upper part is responsible for the decryption. Encryption below and then decryption on top. And we're doing this in blocks of 512 bytes. So knowing this, where are we?
All right. So we have a kind of rolling source cipher. It's not too sophisticated. They didn't use any real strong cryptography, just kind of rolling their own, of course. However, the problem here is that, like Axel said, first, primarily, the encryption key is in the firmware image, but also every image has its own encryption key. So we need some way to recover the encryption key in order to be able to decrypt the images. The key thing here is that the routine actually resets the key stream every 512 bytes. And there's an assumption that we can make, that is that the firmware image is actually a disk image, which usually starts out with like a boot sector, like an MBR or GPT or something like that, and then a file system somewhere later on that firmware image. But in between that boot sector and the file system, you have a bunch of null bytes, so a whole bunch of null sectors. And we can probably use this as kind of a known plain text, so to say, for this encryption routine, because we know or we expect the data, the plain text data there to be all 0 bytes. So let's actually apply that, or let's test it out. And that's also where the hex dump we saw earlier came from. If we see, we notice that at offset 512, 200 hexadecimal, we do see this repeating pattern. There's also like a small repeating pattern every 32 bytes, and that's because the key is 32 bytes. And then it kind of repeats all over again every 64 bytes. We didn't really look into why that happened, but probably some result of the weak cipher. So if we just write some code to kind of decrypt that or try to brute force that, it would look something like this. So we seek to the data in the image where we expect all these null bytes to be. We just read 32 bytes because we only need to brute force the 32 byte key. We don't need to brute force the entire sector. And we kind of just apply the decryption routine, but whenever the decrypted byte results in a null byte, which is what we expect, we save that byte as part of being the part of the key. So if we just let this run, it's actually pretty quick because it's only 32 bytes and it's very easy plain text and a very easy algorithm at that. We get this. We get a nice decode image script where we can just throw a firmware image in. And as you can see at the top, it's gibberish. You know, this is the encrypted form. Even there, you can see that it's pretty weak cryptography because you can pretty much distinguish that there is some printable text in the front. But if we brute force the key, we get a nice recovered key there and the decrypted image at the bottom. And then we can just apply that key to decrypt the entire image and basically have the full recovered image. So at this point, we kind of forgot why we're doing this in the first place. We were just having too much fun basically diving into this firmware, you know, doing, you know, this cryptography attack. But we still needed to actually dive into the firmware images to see where those hashes came from. And more importantly, if we could kind of link firmware versions and maybe even appliance models to those specific hashes, so we can kind of create a database, so to say. And if we were to scan the internet, we can correlate the hashes we see in our internet scans with our local database of hashes against firmware versions. So we need to dive into the root file system. Previously, it didn't really work out. So let's see what how we are going to get there. So if we open this firmware image after we have decrypted it, we get a pretty standard appliance root file system. So it's basically just a kernel and a compressed root file system. It's called rootfs.gz, but sometimes it's a CPIO archive, sometimes it's a TAR archive. It kind of differs per the type of appliance. So you just really need to kind of try one and see which one works.
Try accept.
After we have decompressed this root file system, we get a nice, you know, basic Linux root file system we can browse around, but we don't have any of the binaries, any of the web page stuff that is running basically the FortiGate software. There are a bunch of other archives in there as well, namely bin.tar.exe and user.tar.exe, among some other ones. And these, based on the name, we can kind of guess that these contain the actual binaries that run the FortiGate software. So no problem. It's an exe file again, so just you know, try to decompress it. Except it doesn't work.
Womp womp.
We are sure that it's actually an exe file. If we check the magic, you know, for those of you wondering, it is actually an exe file, but decompressing for some reason just doesn't work. So let's dive into why it doesn't work. So besides, you know, trying to roll their own crypto, FortiGate also decided to play around with compression schemes and modifying well-established file formats. So what they actually did is they slightly modified the exe file format to, for God knows what reason, but they did it anyway. In the root file system, there is an actual exe binary that can decompress these kind of, so to say, corrupt exe files. But we didn't really want to reuse that too much. Like, it worked for, you know, just exploring it further, but it doesn't really scale. You know, if you're trying to analyze 1,000 images, it's pretty annoying to have to extract the root file system every single time, execute this random binary to decompress, you know, the other files. We also want to have like a nice solution without any, you know, writing any files to disk or having to run any other program. Really be able to just analyze a FortiGate image from start to finish with a single tool. So let's dive further why it actually breaks. I won't bore you with all the technical details, but it basically boils down to that they have modified the checksum checking portion of the exe binary. So in an exe file, there are a bunch of checksums. This screenshot is just of the footer and the header, but all throughout the file, there are like a bunch of checksums. Like for the index, for every block, there's a checksum. For every entry in an index, there's a checksum. And all of them kind of look like this. So basically, where you would expect a regular checksum, they just put some bogus bytes. So what do you do to actually do that? Do you patch your own XML or exe binary, you know, to be able to do that? Or we did it some other way, is we try to recover, basically repair this exe stream. And this is where the exe repair checksum function was born, which basically kind of partially parses the exe file format and patches basically all the checksums in all the right places in an exe file. It overlays these on the original file stream, so it doesn't really, you don't really have to hold an entire compressed blob in memory. So it's pretty cheap on memory as well. If you're interested how this actually works, there's a link at the bottom where you can browse around the code how this patching actually functions. So if you now put everything together, we have our original encrypted image. We run our script against it. We first brute force the key. We can then completely decrypt the entire image. We can open the image, basically. We can browse around the file system. We can extract the HTML files where those hashes were located. And we can kind of create our database of hashes against version numbers.
So the fingerprint hash is the thing that's actually shown on the HTTP response body. And the reason we knew it was in this image is because of the like single decrypted image that we had from the virtualized appliance. So that was like the prior research. So yep. The first part, like the decryption part, second part, actually we reversed the other way around. So reversing the reverse, actually. So what do we do now? Well, we need to automate this because, well, you're not going to do 5,000 firmware images by hand. So we built a very nice pipeline. It all ran on this single MacBook for a couple of days. And this was where the first data set came rolling out. Just a very large JSON with every device, build number, firmware version, and its associated hash. So we can start scanning. We can start harvesting these HTTP response bodies, get all these hashes, map them, and you knew not only the version they were running, but the exact device model number. So you can make a very detailed overview of what they're actually running. And some actually came back with also like, oh, that's pretty accurate. That's indeed the device we're running. Is it vulnerable? And then you have to remind them, you're notifying them because they're actually vulnerable. And of course, last but not least, this is the last bit that Eric actually did.
Yeah, so we now have all this knowledge of how FortiGate appliances work, you know, how they, what all the different files do, what they are, you know, how we to open them, how to map them, how to mount different compressed files to what parts of a virtual file system. Basically, all the steps and all the knowledge that we need in order to rebuild kind of from an offline FortiGate image, and that might be like a firmware file, but also like a virtual machine if you're actually running a virtual FortiGate appliances, into kind of a virtual live state. And this is basically what we do with Dissect. For those who don't know what Dissect is, by the way, it's an open source incident response framework that Foxity open sourced 1.5 years ago. And it basically allows you to perform incident response or analyze, or for research or pen testing purposes even, analyze any kind of device that you want, from Windows, Linux, macOS, hypervisors, to appliances or mobile device backups, for example. So we want to build support for FortiGates into Dissect. Well, just apply all the knowledge that we did, you know, into kind of a basic plugin for Dissect, so that it can read all different files, perform the reparation of the exet streams, and basically rebuild this virtual live environment. We still have to put all of our log parsers in there, so that if you are going to analyze a FortiGate appliances, you can actually, you know, do something useful. Now you can basically just browse around and run all of our other existing Linux plugins against it, but nothing really FortiGate specific. Also interesting to note is actually that the report that Axel showed earlier from the intelligence services, they released a IOC checking script for FortiGate appliances, and it actually does use this functionality in Dissect. And they actually contributed a lot as well to making, really building it out to all the different versions and types of appliances that Fortinet has. All right.
The best part.
The best part. Because it also includes something. Which is it? Is this one?
Yeah. Yes. Maybe enlarge it.
Yeah. It also includes something, some special Easter egg that we put into Dissect that might be nice to show here in Hack Hotel as well. So Target Shell is a tool in Dissect that we can use to open a shell on some kind of source data. And here we already have a pre-decrypted firmware file because the decryption takes a little bit long for the demo. And we just include cyber there so that we, you know, get a nice cyber effect.
Dramatic effect.
Takes a bit longer on the large screen, but give it a second.
Well, my terminal is very slow for some reason.
Also, his terminal is slow. There we go. So now it's loading all the files. It's loading the root file system. It's repairing the exet files. And now we are in this firmware image. And we can just ls and again.
You have to.
Takes a bit, but give it a moment. There you go. And also do something that probably works. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it actually didn't work. But demo effect. Right. How do I exit?
Just tap. Well, that concludes basically the research part. And thank you. So I didn't really come up with a conclusion. But the conclusion in this is that like vendors encrypting their firmwares is I can kind of get it from an IP perspective, but in terms of what the Dutch Institute for Vulnerability Disclosure is actually doing, it kind of hinders this process. Luckily, this was a half-assed attempt at implementing your own encryption, so you can break it. But they might fix this and just implement something that actually works, and then you're, well, you're fucked, because you just need an actual device. And those devices are pretty easy to come by if you have the money. And most of us researchers are just dirt poor. We're not going to spend that money. So we hope to work closer together with vendors as well, so they can provide these kind of things in a like more secure kind of environment. And then we can look at them and also communicate back to them when we see something that might be a little bit off or might be like necessary to fix. So that's basically the conclusion. If you have any questions, we're happy to take them, but we're also almost out of time.
No, we could take a little bit more time. So if you really need to go, you can, of course, go. But the next lecture will start at 3 o'clock, I just learned. Oh, okay. So we've got ample time for any questions, theories, or anything you want to shout out to.
We also have a C-Struck demo. No, I'm kidding.
We have another talk, Oprasa.
It's true.
Nobody? Oh, there's a question in the back. I'll come to you. What happened to the onesie?
The onesie is already in my car, unfortunately. Yeah, okay, thank you for the talk, excellent. I was wondering, how do you retrieve all these web pages that contain the fingerprint that you have to look for at such a large scale?
You can actually make a candidate list. So you look at the internet as a whole, but there are services like Census that you can use. Mm-hmm. So you're a little bit dependent on how much they are actually getting back, because you can, of course, block their GET request. But you can query what they got back in the HTTP response bodies, and you make like a candidate list that is, it's just a query. So you're looking for very specific things. It can be like FortiOS, maybe in the title. But in this case, like the URI, the hash is in there, but the scripts are also very like distinctive. So once you see those scripts in the HTTP response body, you can kind of say with 90 to 99% accuracy that this is indeed a FortiGate.
Okay, thank you.
And with this selection, FoxIT helps their customers.
Yep.
And DIVD has their own scanning infrastructure doing the rest of the world.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Cool.
How many vulnerable devices did we find around the world?
I think the number is 382,000 right now. From the very nice vanity number, by the way, if you query the census data they put in their Google storage, you get 690,069. So that's a very nice vanity number, but this is, of course, not complete data. As I said, you can block them, so the number is probably a little bit higher. But yeah, 382,000 are indeed running a vulnerable version. I have a little side note. We didn't get any new images since June, because FortiGate actually removed the part where you just needed an account at their portal, which is you have a device, you enlist it in your account, and then you could just download every firmware image. They removed that part. Now you can only download the firmware image of the device you're owning. So after June, we don't have any new firmware image anymore. So the number that is actually vulnerable might like be higher, because right now we just notify that as an unknown. We don't know.
And yes, one of them was of the Ministry of Defense. And I can add a little bit news to it. The NOS Broadcasting was just visiting Hacker Hotel. So tonight at 8 o'clock, there will be an item on FortiGate. They've been reporting here. So this is one line of research we do at DIVD. You know, there's a vulnerability, we fingerprint, we scan the whole world, we notify by the mass. A second line of research, that will be the next talk. If we find open databases or leaked credentials, we notify them saying, well, this is open. There will be Jelle Ursum giving the talk at 3 o'clock in this room. And the third line of research is looking for 0 days. And DIVD, we are also a CNA, so CV numbering authority. So during Hacker Hotel, we created the buffer overflow on the badge using a printer. So we already got our CVE number for the badge. Breaking news. There's still a question in the back. Let me use the microphone so the people at home can hear you too.
Maybe a more general question, but if you find these devices, And you, how do you notify the owners? How do you know the owners behind the IP addresses and stuff like that? Are there email addresses in the data you get back as well? Or how is that done? How is that performed?
So you can enrich IP addresses with abuse information, and this is just best efforts, because while the abuse email might just be bounced to an inbox nobody looks at, or even worse, the whole abuse mail just simply doesn't exist, but it's the last one that registered with the IP. But that's really the only way. So you never know if you're actually getting to the person that's running the device.
Yeah, well, actually, do a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's okay.
Take over. But now, based on the IP in the WIS, we know the URL. Then it's info@security@abuse. We email. Of course, we look for security.txt. So if you have that, please do. And also, we forward our notifications through GovCert. And here in the Netherlands, NCC is really helping out with also even calling potential victims. So yeah, that's the way to find people. A last question before we quit. No? Oh, yeah, over there. Hello. Hello.
Did you investigate the distribution of vulnerable devices globally?
I think Ralph Horn, also from the Dutch Institute of Vulnerability Disclosure, he actually showed a table. US is by far the most fucked. Followed closely by the Netherlands, so we're not that far off. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for your attention. Big applause for Erik Schoonpen and Axel Poesenaar.
Thank you.